Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
You think of a lot of things, I think, that as you're going through those moments. I know that I bargained and I pleaded and I begged, you know, for him to be okay, and that, you know, you make all these bargains with how you will change your life forever if he could just be okay when we get there.
On the evening of February 16th, 2018, 20-year-old Ryan Stuga went to a silent disco with some of his friends in the resort town of Sun Peaks, British Columbia. Later on, he and his friends went to a house party nearby. In the early morning hours of the 17th, Ryan was seen leaving this house party. Everyone assumed he was heading home after a fun night. However, Ryan Stuga would never be seen or heard from again once he exited the party. Extensive searches have been conducted for Ryan, but no trace of him has ever been found. What happened to Ryan during his walk home in Sun Peaks remains a mystery. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 152 of The Vanished, Ryan Stuga's story. Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best-fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. When we were young, we were often asked, "What do you want to do when you grow up?" Some people know the answer to that question from a very early age, and some of us simply don't. There always appears to be so much pressure put into making such a huge decision at a relatively young age, whether it be career-wise or another path. I personally was in my mid-20s when I got my first job as a paralegal. I loved the work, but there was always something else needing in the back of my mind. A few years ago, I decided to start a podcast focusing on missing persons cases, with a strong desire to cover those who had little to no news coverage. Fast forward to this present moment, and it is now my full-time career, helping people from all walks of life tell the stories of those who have lost their voice. If you had told me a decade ago that this is what I would be doing now, I probably wouldn't have believed you. At the time, I hadn't figured out my true path yet. And you know what? That's perfectly fine. All the questions that are posed to us about our futures don't need to have answers by the age of 18 or 19. Another individual who believed this same mode of thinking was Ryan Stuga. When Ryan was 18 years old, he graduated from high school and decided to take a year off to work for his father, testing the waters to see whether or not his father's business was something he wanted to pursue. Once that year had lapsed, he decided he wanted to spend a year at school, furthering his education to see if this path was one that he wanted to go down. After a year of working and then a year of studying, 20-year-old Ryan decided that he wanted a year of adventure. So he made up his mind to spend the winter working at the Sun Peaks Resort in British Columbia, about 9.5 hours away from Ryan's hometown. He went out there with his best friend, and he appeared to be having the time of his life, telling his mother during a phone call home that he was truly happy to be where he was. But on February 17, 2018, something happened. 20-year-old Ryan had been at work on February 16th. That evening, he and his roommates had plans to go to a silent disco at a local bar. A silent disco is an event where individuals are given headphones to wear. Music is transmitted wirelessly to the headphones, so if you don't have them on, you're going to be standing amongst a sea of people dancing to what appears to be no music. Once the event was over, Ryan and his friends went to a house party that was in walking distance of the bar. After some time, the group that Ryan was with wanted to leave the party and go home. It has been said that Ryan was last seen standing up at the residence, possibly putting on a coat and shoes in preparation to leave and brave the brief yet cold walk back to his home. One of Ryan's roommates believed that he was behind him when he was making his way out of the party, but no one can say for sure. The following day is when it was noticed that Ryan had missed his shift at work, something that was extremely uncharacteristic of him. A missing persons report was filed, and Ryan's roommate contacted his family to let them know what was going on. Since then, there has been no activity on any of Ryan's accounts. For this episode, I had the opportunity to speak with Ryan's mother, Heather, about her son and the events leading up to his disappearance. Here's Heather speaking about Ryan.
Ryan had, he turned 18, finished high school, and decided that he was going to have a year of working. So he did a year of work with my husband's company. And then the next year he decided he wasn't quite sure what he wanted to do. So he decided that he was going to go to university and do a year of school. And he did well there. But at the end of the year, he still didn't know what he wanted to do. And he wasn't sure if he wanted to continue to pursue general sciences, if he wasn't sure what sort of job he could get afterwards. So he made a decision to do a year of adventure. Now, he had been almost this at this point in time, 20 years old, had never left home, been with us. I work for an airline, and you would think that with the benefits that I get, that he would have the opportunity to travel the world and want to see it. And he did have the opportunity, but never really wanted to do that. So he came to me on his birthday, just when he turned 20. The two of us had gone out, and he had the sort of expectant smile on him, and you could tell he wanted to tell me something. And so I'm like, okay, so what do you think is going to happen for you in the next couple of months? And he said, you know, I was thinking of in the fall, maybe heading up to a ski resort in BC. We have obviously some in here in Alberta, but he really wanted the more temperate weather that comes from the province of British Columbia. And he liked, I think, that lifestyle. And I think he just wanted a bit of separation. And so he was making a decision to head to BC and go to one of the ski resorts and work there for the season. And I wasn't sure if he was wanting to see what my thought process was. And I know he was probably going to go anyways, regardless of whether I said yes or said no. I mean, he was actually of the age to do that. But I know that he wanted so much for our approval. And I just remember looking at him and having a big smile. And I'm like, that sounds really exciting. Sounds like you've got a plan. Like, do you know where you want to go and all the rest? And so he ended up applying with his roommate or his friend here from Edmonton. They've known each other since they were about 14. And the two of them made this decision to go to Sun Peaks, and they applied and they both got a position. And so Sun Peaks is near the city of Kamloops, British Columbia. So it's about 9.5 hours away from our hometown of Beaumont, Alberta. And the way Sun Peaks is, you're coming in from Kamloops, it's about a 45-minute drive from the downtown area. And when you get off the highway, there's just a little entrance into it. And it starts off with, it's not even a town, it's called Heffley Creek. Has a general food store and a post office, and then some houses, and that's it. And then you've got a 32-kilometer climb on winding roads to get up to the very, very top. Now, halfway through, you'll hit a town called Whitecroft that has no amenities in it at all. It's just a community loop where houses are, and then you continue on another 15 to 20 kilometers to get up to the top of Sun Peaks. So it's remote in the sense that it's not easily accessible all the time. There's no buses running. There's no trains nearby, that sort of thing. It is something that you actually have to drive up to. And I think the people that visit Sun Peaks to go there for the winter season enjoy that because it's like a getaway. And so Ryan and his friend James applied and got a position. James went first November 1st, and then Ryan left December 1st to head to his job and was only supposed to be there until April 16th. So he was gone, had a house that he lived in with James. They lived in a very tiny bedroom. They shared twin bunks, and it was big enough to have the twin bunks, a dresser with a TV on it, and a small closet. And for that privilege, they paid $450 each a month and shared the rest of the house with four other people. So a couple that had the master bedroom, and then two girls that lived upstairs in the open loft. And so there were six of them living at that house, going in and working at the ski resort. So he had been there for 2.5 months, and everything was going fine. Skied, snowboarded, actually, that's what he did. He snowboarded for 36 days straight, enjoyed meeting his friends, was still at home between going and working on the hill all day. He'd come home and hang out and play on his PlayStation or Xbox, and, you know, was just living what the culture up there was sort of all about, and was enjoying himself. Had no problems. Work was going really well. In fact, they wanted to give him a 75-cent raise to become a supervisor, and he said no thanks. He wasn't interested in that. He was just interested in working. And he had left a job that he was working with my husband's company, where he was making almost $24 an hour, so that he could come and work in the town of Sun Peaks for $11.47, which is minimum wage there. So he didn't go up there for the money. He went up there for the experience and was having a good time by all accounts.
It's important to note that the drinking age in this part of Canada is 19 years old. So Ryan, being a 20-year-old man living amongst other people his own age, would attend parties throughout his duration at Sun Peaks. On February 17th, Heather received a text message from Ryan's roommate, a message that she was not expecting.
We received a text Saturday, February 17th, about 9:30 our time. And it was from his roommate, who said to us, "Hey, Heather, I don't mean to worry you, but Ryan didn't come home last night and didn't show up for work." The next day, we filed a missing police report and just wanted to let you know in case they call you. And I remember trying to read through the text and not quite comprehending it, and trying to skip through, and I'm reading it to Scott because I don't know if I thought that it would make more sense if I said it to my husband or not, but I just remember him looking at me, and I'm thinking, okay, whatever I just said is exactly what I think I said, and it's not landing with him either. It this doesn't make sense. So we end up calling him, the roommate, and going, I don't understand. Like, what are you talking about? We'd only been to Sun Peaks once. We'd gone as a family about 2 years ago with a couple of our friends and Ryan's girlfriend at the time, and spent New Year's there. So, I mean, we didn't know much about the area, just from where we stayed to get to the hill and walk back. That was probably just about it. So when they were talking about, you know, he left the house, this house that had a party, we thought he was right behind us. He left and, you know, didn't come home. I'm like, okay, well, like, where could he possibly have gone? Like, how do you get there? Are there paths? I'm thinking ski resort. I'm thinking mountainous. I don't know. Is there roads? I had no idea what I was thinking. He's trying to explain it and he's not doing a very good job. And at that point, my husband's like, I can't have the conversation with them. It's just, nothing's making sense. I need to call the RCMP. So we called the rural detachment that was handling the case. And we didn't get a whole lot more information except that Ryan didn't show up for work that day. His shift was about 11:30 on a Saturday, hadn't showed up. And they had called, and that was very unusual for him. He had never missed work, not even when he was here in Beaumont. He had just never missed a shift. And he had missed it, and they were concerned. But by the time the roommates thought to call the police, it wasn't until about 8:30 that Saturday night. And so the police were going up. Now, where Sun Peaks is, as I said, 45 minutes from the downtown district of Kamloops, the rural detachment that handles any of the cases that are in the Sun Peaks and the municipality or surrounding it, it's 45 minutes away. So when they call the RCMP to report Ryan missing, it takes almost 45 minutes for them to mobilize and get up to the top of the hill. So they got up there and they brought their RCMP canine unit and started doing the paths. And really, when you look at where Ryan was last seen to where his house was, there was probably only about three paths that he could take if he was going to go home. One is the path that he would have taken all the time, which is to suburb neighborhood, sort of where they have houses, walking down the street, getting to the end of the street, making a left turn. And then there, the municipality had made a path that went under, sort of below the road, so that the kids or the staff weren't walking up on top where visibility may be a little bit altered depending on the conditions of snow and darkness. And so they had it so it'd be a little bit more safer so people could walk on this well-groomed path that was quite large. And so that was the route Ryan would have taken, and he would have popped right up at the top of the road, and his house was right to the left. So that's the way he should have gone home. And in between that, between the two houses, there's creek and forest, but the snow was literally up to about 14 feet. So it isn't a path that Ryan would normally be able to take without snowshoes. And then the other path is if he had come out of the house and turned right, he could have gone all the way down to the end of the road on the other side. And there is a bridge. It's a ski out bridge that he could have come that way, but he had never gone that way before. It wasn't something that he was familiar with. And then he could have gone behind the house. So they spent the evening from the time they went up until probably about 1 o'clock. We were talking to them on our way to Kamloops. As soon as we talked to the RCMP, Scott and I made the decision that we needed to be in Sun Peak. So we drove throughout the night to get there. And as we were driving up in the early morning of Sunday, you know, you could see the snow. You know, I kept looking at the temperature gauge inside the car, and I was like, okay, you know what? If it's -4, you know, maybe it's not so bad. -4, it's really cold here in Alberta, but BC tends to get more temperate weather. And so I kept praying as we're going up, you know, just let the weather be okay.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. To put this in the simplest of terms, Sun Peaks Resort and that area of Canada is cold, especially during the winter months. While the summer months tend to be warmer, their lows still can reach anywhere between 30 to 40 degrees Fahrenheit. When Ryan went missing in February, the average temperature was just 13 degrees Fahrenheit at night. This is not accounting for wind chill or the hazards that fresh snowfall can bring. Driving through the night to look for their missing son, Heather's mind focused on the weather and what could be happening to her son in that moment.
If he passed out, he could survive. He's just maybe he could be covered. You think of a lot of things, I think, that as you're going through those moments. I know that I bargained and I pleaded and I begged, you know, for him to be okay, and that, you know, you make all these bargains with how you will change your life forever if he could just be okay when we get there. And so as we're driving up to the top of the hill, we are behind a snow plow, and the snow at that point, just driving up the hill, was anywhere from 8 to 14 feet piled on the sides of the road. Really difficult to see, and it's all mountainous as you drive up. So we get there and meet up with the RCMP, who returned to the scene at about 7:30. They brought their canine unit again to go over it while it was in daylight. And their Kamloops Search and Rescue, which we call KSAR, were coming up to help conduct a search on the Sunday. So they showed up about 8:30 and searched for the day. So I remember Scott and I sitting in this makeshift command center, which was really a trauma room at their medical or their ski patrol center, waiting for some news. And we thought for sure that they would find him within the first couple hours. And then that kept dragging on. And so finally, I think we went back to our hotel room about 7 o'clock at night. It was dark. And Kamloops came in with a constable from the RCMP to tell us that they had done all the tasks that the RCMP had set out for them to do. And until something came up, that they wouldn't be able to search again. And I just remember sitting there going, okay, but I'll see you guys tomorrow. Like, I'll see somebody tomorrow. Maybe not all 17 volunteers that had come out, but we will see somebody tomorrow. You know, I never got the impression, I think at the time, that they expected us to do anything but sit there and we were going to continue with the search until we found him. However, I had 5 friends that ignored our wishes and said, you know, we're coming up. And so they drove from Edmonton on that Sunday and arrived Sunday night. And they sat there and they're like, don't you remember, Heather? Don't you remember when the RCMP constable said, so on your way out of town, either tomorrow or the next day, just stop in and we'll tell you what our next steps are going to be. And I don't remember that either. I think I might have been in shock, but I just thought, well, there's no way they'll tell us to go home. But in essence, I think they probably did, that there was no more to be done.
According to Heather, it appears that the RCMP, which stands for the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, expected the Stukas to leave within a 48-hour time frame. However, Heather and her husband Scott had no intentions of leaving without their son.
As Ryan's mother and Scott, his father, there is absolutely no way that we were going to be able to leave until we found him. So we went to bed that night, and then the next morning we woke up and we walked down to that makeshift command center that had been put back to place with everything that it was before, and there was nobody there. Absolutely nobody. There was no search and rescue. The RCMP constable had come, a different one, had come during the day just to check in with us. And I don't know if they were conducting their searches. I know that RCMP and K-9 were intermittent throughout the week, but there was absolutely nobody there on that Monday to search for our son. So at that point, I think it was shocking for us. It's unfathomable to me that there would be no resources, no liaison, nothing. So we mobilized ourselves. My husband and 5 other people went, and we didn't bring up the stuff to search. Scott did. The rest of us didn't have anything. So we rented snow boots and snow pants and gloves and snowshoes because the snow was so thick, and we tried to figure out how to search. And that's what I think we did for the first couple of days until we were able to come up with a command center and maps of the area. And even if after that, probably about 3 weeks later, did we realize that all the searching that we had probably done in those weeks prior were not that productive. But there was nobody out there to give us any clue, inclination of what we were doing right and what we were doing wrong. We asked if there was somebody that we could hire, or if they could, one of the search and rescue could come as a consultant, but they didn't do that. So I think that what happens is, you know, we're obviously in a society where liability issues become predominant. And so nobody wanted to show us how to search. Nobody wanted to give us any tips or tricks or grid work or what we would need, how we would search, nothing like that, in case, I suppose, if somebody got hurt. I guess logically that might make sense, but I think on a human level, it seems that somebody dropped the ball. Like that to me, that seems so far apart what we should be doing to help people. I find it unfathomable that there was absolutely no help. They did come back, search and rescue came back the next Saturday and conducted another search. But at that point in time, from a mother's perspective, it's really a wash. I appreciate that they did so. And I appreciate that all those volunteers came out to help. But you were our best hope. And when you don't show up for a week later, we're just searching. You're just searching for the body. I think when we needed them, there was nobody there. There was nobody there. And so we learned how to search. We learned how to do grid maps. We learned what equipment we needed. We learned how to make our own equipment, how to make probes, what we were looking at. And I think for us, everybody would come and we'd say, well, we've covered, you know, the hot spot, which was the party that Ryan was at, to the party or the house that he should have. And how the night went for Ryan was, you know, it's so benign, I think.
I was curious as to whether or not Heather had any details about Ryan's day before the party. Did anything occur that was out of place or suspicious? Apparently, from all accounts, it was just a normal day.
You know, he was working all day at the Hill, his normal shift, so 11:30 to 7 or 11 to 7. Sometime during that day, he did his online banking. So while he was at work, he had taken money out so that it was payday. So he took money out so he'd have money for that night. And he went online to do his bill payments. So made sure his phone bill was paid, his rent was paid, and his Visa was paid, and do all of his transfers into his other account. So it was fine during the day. And then after work, he drove a friend that was sick home and then headed back to his house. They were going to the bar at the top of the hill. So for where the majority of the staff live, they're down about a 20-minute walk from the main village where everything is. So a lot of houses are down that area. We didn't even realize for the first week that most of those houses were quadplexes. We thought they were duplexes, but most of them have a basement suite to them. And so there's lots of staff that live that end up living there to discount the rent because the rent can be expensive. So they don't have cabs up there. They do this year, but they did not at that time. So a lot of kids make extra money if they have their own vehicle by driving people up to the village and they just take donations. And so that's what they had. They had a car arranged for someone to take them up to the bar at the top of the in the village called Bottoms, where they were doing a silent disco. So everybody has headphones on. They have to give their licenses to the coat check person. They get headphones and then they wear the headphones and it's completely silent, but they all listen to the same music. So everything went fine there. He had his last picture was taken there. And from the look of his picture, he was absolutely happy and was having a good time and hanging out with his friends. Nothing happened at that party. There was nothing that stood out to anybody, and they had cameras and photographers were taking pictures that were paid for photographers taking pictures throughout that night. And that's where Ryan's picture came from. The bar shut down at about 1:00. They handed back in their headphones and got their licenses back. And then they ended up walking home, but it was cold that night. It was minus 26 Celsius for them. So for them to walk home, it was quite cold. Now they're all wearing winter coats, but they're wearing shoes and really no hats or no mitts. Walking home, and one of the shuttle buses that drives up from the airport saw them and generously picked about 10 to 14 of them up and dropped them off just close to where they decided to go for this party. And when we talk about this party, there was about 3 houses in this one area called Burfield that had staff living in there. And so each night it could be a different house that would kind of host it, but there was about 3 that actually had places. And because everybody works different schedules, Ryan had Sundays and Mondays off. His roommate had Saturday and Sunday off. Some of the other roommates had a Monday, Tuesday off. So you know, you've got so many people and they all work different shifts depending on where they work. So they decided to go to the one house. It was called the Sunday Funday House. And when they went there, there was nine of them that all knew each other, sat on the couch and pretty much stayed there the whole night. Or while they were there, there was people coming and going. And so there was people coming in that were sober that finished working at the bars or the hotels, finished their shift and headed over there because everything else was closed. You would have had some drunk people. You probably would have had some drunk and high people, and you probably would have had high people. It was just a whole mix of people. And that's what the culture up there, if you're at a ski resort, that's pretty much what you're getting is people up there, like-minded people that are there to ski or board, enjoy the outdoors, hang out. I feel like it's likened to sort of Woodstock, enjoying your life and not really caring about too much more than that. So nothing really happened at the party.
How is it that no one saw where Ryan went that night once he and his friends decided to leave? You have to think, this is a group of young individuals at a party where drinking and other things are occurring. Perhaps it was just an oversight that no one saw exactly what Ryan was doing, because they were too busy with what was happening around them. A person never thinks that something so life-altering is about to occur to an individual in a moment of relaxation and fun amongst friends.
His roommate decided to leave early, and so he got up and said goodnight to everybody and walked home and made it home, and it was no problem for him. His other two roommates plus a friend stood up and said, okay, we're heading home too. And Ryan stood up and went to put on his jacket, and he followed them towards the door. And so they continued walking out. And I don't know if Ryan got stopped, was talking to somebody, if he wasn't wearing shoes. And so he stopped to put on shoes, but they walked right out the door and continued walking home. And there's no street lights on this block. It's only lit up by sensor light. And so unless someone had a sensor light on, lights wouldn't normally come on. And it's cold. So they continue to walk. And the last sighting that we have is Brian as he walked towards the door. And then from then, it's like he vanished into thin air. The three people walking home walked home for a bit and then sort of looked behind and realized that Ryan wasn't right behind him, which isn't really a cause for concern for me. I think that, you know, the one roommate's 31, the other one is 25 or 26, Ryan's 21 almost. I don't expect a grown adult to wait for another one. They just thought either he was lagging behind or decided to stay a little bit longer. They didn't think anything of it and continued on. And I think in minus 26 weather, I'm not sure I would do anything differently myself. And we're not talking about 14-year-old kids that are hanging out and we're all sticking together as a group in an unknown, unfamiliar place. And, you know, you're all walking home together and somebody leaves somebody on the side of a rural road. It's not even remotely the same. They're grown adults and I wouldn't expect them to do anything different. But of course, when they go home, they go right to bed. From then on, nobody remembers Ryan anywhere. So there's absolutely no trace at this point. And even at that moment when we received the text and head up there and they did their search on the Sunday and we started our search on the Monday, we have gotten no further. There is no direction that we could tell you with certainty that he went. There's no sightings of him that we can say with certainty that have happened. There's no clothing that's been left behind. There's nobody that stands out that's overtly suspicious, any of those things. So at almost 9 months, we were at the exact same place that we were when we went up there February 18th. And we are as alone as the day of Monday, February 19th, when nobody else was there searching for our son unless we asked for volunteers and they showed up.
Given the weather, the time of night, and the lack of outdoor lighting, it isn't shocking that no one spotted Ryan walking around once he had left the house. However, Heather would later notice that information being put out about Ryan's description was incorrect. So there is a possibility that if there was a sighting, those individuals who saw him mistook him for someone else, because he didn't match the description being broadcasted by news outlets. They had stated that he was 19 years old, around 150 pounds, and about 5 feet 6 inches tall.
So he was not 19 years old. He was not 5 foot 6, and he wasn't 150 pounds. So my son is 6 foot and a bit, and he's 180 pounds, and he's a muscular, tall, fit guy who plays rugby against, you know, 40-year-old guys and holds his own. He's not a shrinking violet in the sense of wandering through and not being able to run or take care of himself in that sense. So that was the description. Now, of course, the police had the right one when we were able to clarify it, but all the newscasts that went out at the time were all incorrect. Now, we were able to clarify that with them too as time went on, but in the first day or two, you don't think it's all that important because we're going to find him, and the wrong information seems moot. However, as the time goes by, we realize that that information needs to be updated and updated quickly, and so it was. And once that came, there was a witness that was working at the bar, was actually the coat check person and was working at the bar and was driving home from the village. And they can either go the main road, which is Sun Peaks Road, or it, depending on where their houses are in by the staff accommodations, they would just make a left and go off of Fairways. And that's, again, residential. It's almost like a ring road sort of around. And so they were driving on this ring road, and about 1:55, they thought they saw someone matching Ryan's description. So tall, with a blue jacket, a hood on, and, you know, hands in pocket and sort of head down. So never actually saw a face, but thought they had saw somebody that matched his description. So the police knew about that within the first 2 days. A couple of days after that, then we realized the timeline might not be correct, because the one roommate that left with her boyfriend, who lives at the house, so both roommates, they're the ones that said to Ryan, like, we're leaving. And Ryan was supposed to be right behind them. They went home. And so I said there was 9 people that sat at the party. So one of them was Ryan's roommate, Jane, who left first and walked home. And then there was 8 left. So the 2 roommates and the friend get up to go. And so does Ryan. That leaves 4 left. So when they walk out the door, there's 4 people left that all know Ryan, that all knew the roommates, that all hung out. And they took a picture of themselves and sent it to the female roommate and said, hey, we're coming to your house to party. Now, this text was sent at 1:37 a.m. on the Saturday morning. Logic dictates to me that if we're all sitting on a couch together, I'm not taking a picture with my 4 friends and sending it to you guys if you guys are sitting right beside us. You're either going to remember that I took a picture and just messaged you, but more likely than not, it's because those 4 people have left that they're sending it saying, we're coming to your house to party. So that was sent to them at about 1:37, which means that James had already left at that time, which means that the other 2 roommates and the friend, and most likely Ryan, because he was not in that picture and they don't remember seeing him, they were all gone from that house about 1:35, I would say. And that actually ties in with the sighting of Ryan at about, or what could possibly have been Ryan, at about 1:55, because the walk from the house that had the party at to where the witness had saw someone matching his description, it takes about 20 minutes. So when she actually has a record of seeing him at 1:55, that probably would mark the time in between. But we didn't think about that. Like, when we had that tip, that was the biggest tip we had, because nobody else had told us they had seen him. Once he walked to that door, nobody could remember it at all. So we had this tip within the first couple of days. The RCMP had that tip within the first couple of days, and also had the timeline given to them within the first week, and no other investigation was done that I'm aware of on their part to see if that matched or didn't match, and to give us a new timeline. So if they did that, we were never made aware of that. My husband went with his group of volunteers, and they did that search in around the area, because there's a bridge on both sides, and so there's a bit of steepness. And so they went through the snow and they looked. But at that time, we didn't know what we were doing in the first week. We were operating out of desperation and fear and a whole lack of knowledge. And so I think at best, they did a cursory search. We didn't hear about this tip again. It didn't come out to us again until, I think, Easter weekend. We were sitting at Bottoms, the bar, restaurant, bar, but we were sitting there. The witness was still working there. and came up and said, you know, I work two jobs and I would really like to be able to help. But I was so sure that I saw somebody that matched Ryan's description that night, and I did send it to the police, but they never got back to me. And so I had to sit there and go, okay, wait, I need you to go over that information again.
You aren't sleeping and you're stressed out. That's how it was for me, so I cleared out my cabinet and reset my health with CBD from CB Distillery. Their deep sleep gummies are amazing. CB Distillery's targeted formulations are made from the highest quality clean ingredients. No fluff, no fillers, just pure, effective CBD solutions designed to help support your health. In two non-clinical surveys, 81% of customers experienced more calm, 80% said CBD helped with pain after physical activity, and an impressive 90% said they slept better with CBD. If you struggle with a health concern and haven't found relief, make the change to CB Distillery. And with over 2 million customers and a solid 100% money-back guarantee, CB Distillery is a source to trust. I have a 20% discount to get you started. Visit cbdistillery.com and use code VANISHED for 20% off. That's cbdistillery.com, code VANISHED. cbdistillery.com. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. After going over all the information that they had, Heather realized that the timeline that she originally had was off. Heather reached out to the RCMP and Search and Rescue to see if they could look into this potential witness. Unfortunately, due to the weather, the RCMP was not sure if they would even be able to search the areas.
Search and Rescue told us, "We will be able to come back if two of the conditions have been met. One, an environmental change, which would have been all the snow melting. And the other one would be if a tip or something came in that placed Ryan in a different location." Because they didn't search all of Sun Peaks. They searched from the area from the house that he was supposed to be at to the house that he should have ended up. And they do concentric circles. So they do 25, 50, and 75. And they expand their search outside of that. And so that's what they really had done that the first couple of times, based on their procedures and computer programs about where most likely you would find somebody in this situation. So now we have a new location, and I remember sending the RCMP going, okay, so, you know, you've asked us for that. That's what we've given it. And, you know, they said, yeah, we'll talk to them, but I don't know if Search and Rescue will be able to come. It's a, you know, there's still a lot of snow, and the berms are quite high and for their safety. And that makes no sense to me at all. So, you know, I emailed back and said, no offense meant to be gathered from this, but I have to tell you that we know what the snow is like. We've been out, and at this point in time, it's now April 15th. My husband and I have been there since February 18th, and not a day has gone by that we have not searched all day. My husband got up every single morning at 7:30 and put on his snow pants and his jacket and his boots. And he went out as soon as light came up at about 8:30, and he did not stop until there was no light left. Every single day. There's not a day that we had off. There's not a day that we took a break, anything at that point in time. So we're well aware of what the conditions in the Sun Peaks area has given us. We've had over 1,000 volunteers by this time. The majority of them will have come more than once and continue to come even to this day, still have new people that have never been there. So we know what the conditions are, and our volunteers who are not professionals have been out there searching every single day. We had 16-year-old twins at the time that were coming and searching for my son. So we knew what they were, and we knew how high the berms are. But my husband also had two bobcats. The municipality or the corporation of Sun Peaks allowed them to go through and break up all the snow with their bobcats and diggers. And that is another thing when you think about the tragedy and horror of all of this. When you have a father out there digging in snowbanks and hope that, you know, the fear is that I need to get through these snowbanks in order to see, because so much snow had accumulated after Ryan went missing, that even a little bit of dusting of snow would have covered him. And if we didn't get there enough, more snow came on top. But you're looking through these berms of snow, praying that you can find him, because we're desperate to find him, but also praying, what happens if my shovel goes in? Like, what am I digging up? How am I preserving my son? What am I doing? And that's a horror in itself. And yet that is what we were left to do.
I was curious how Heather felt towards the RCMP and the search and rescue efforts put forth to look for Ryan, and if they were able to gather any information from his phone that could help locate him.
He used his phone to text his roommates on the way home at 7 o'clock, and that was it. He never used his phone again that night. He had it with him. He was with his friends. It was, for him, he is not like me. I would probably have taken 40 selfies, two of which would have been somewhat okay to use on social media. And he wasn't like that. He didn't take those pictures. He didn't text somebody to say, hey, I'm coming over later. You know, I'd like to hook up, or, you know, any, like, nothing. He used those at all. And so we tried to find out from the phone companies, okay, what can you tell us? Now, I know that the police did a humanitarian ping Sunday morning, early Sunday morning. They would have done about 3 o'clock in the morning. I think they did a humanitarian ping. So they were able to get the last ping from the phone. And so I don't really know how all of that works, but it was still at that time, the last ping before the phone went completely dead was in Sun Peaks. And that's all we had. Now, we had everything. We were able to get into everything except for iPhone. Find my iPhone. I know he was too lazy to turn that off. You'd have to turn it off and shut off your phone. Well, it's his own plan. The only person going to be tracking him would be him. So he wouldn't have turned it off. So I can almost guarantee Find My iPhone was on, his location finder was on, turned on. But because we couldn't get into his iCloud account or his iPhone account, it's not like he used to do before, because we had his email address. We'd send it to his email and we could change the password and then we could get in there and we could see it. But it's got the two-way authentication. So because he has no other iPhone or iPad or anything else like that, it gets sent right to his phone. And so there was no way to get around it. The RCMP couldn't get around it with Apple. Nobody could say, hey, can you just give us so that we can change that? So we will never know, and even to this day, if we had been able to get into Find My iPhone, if that would have been able to give us a direction. You know, despite all the things, I feel like a lot of times that our network and our group of people that have come up to help us, we've been left alone to do the search on our own for such a long period of time, but also to gather information and make the connection of dots between there. We're not experts in either one. And I just don't know if things should be done differently. Were they being done differently? There's a lot of things that they can tell us, and there's a lot of things that I understand from a legal perspective they can't. But it just feels like we've been left alone more often than we've been given help from the appropriate sources. Other than that, we've had an amazing and tremendous support from the Sun Peaks community, the municipality, and the corporation, as well as the Kamloops area, and as well as our hometown of Beaumont. We've had two huge buses that came from the Edmonton Red Deer area that drove up and that were donated, as well as accommodations were donated. And so we had a plane that they fundraised for so that they could fly them up so they could have more 2 days of searching rather than just one day. We've had some tremendous support. And for that, I think we will always be grateful. However, I think it makes me I think, sad that the resources that are provided to us by our government, by the provinces, by our communities are not utilized in the way that they should be.
Heather is known for using Facebook to tell stories about Ryan to share with the world. It's a healing and cathartic practice for her, but it also helps people all across the world get to know Ryan. Heather is realistic about the fact that she was close to her son, but she also understands there may have been aspects of his life that she was unaware of.
The stories that I tell about Ryan on the Facebook page or on the Instagram page, a lot of it's cathartic for me, but it also reminds me of these memories that are so easily forgotten in the everyday horror. But what I want to also do is for people to get to know my son, to know what would be reasonable. Now, as his mother, of course, you know, I want to say he's perfectly imperfect. I suppose what mother wouldn't say that, but I was always realistic about who we are as people, including my children. We do the best that we can, and every once in a while there's missteps along the way, and that's what it takes to be human. So I don't pretend that I know my son the best of everybody. I knew him as a child, and I've loved him as his mother, but do I think that I knew every little thing about him? Absolutely not. But his friends did. Those are the friends. He's had the same group of friends since he was in grade one. They hung out consistently. Those are great, great kids. Not troublemakers, nothing like that. Very loyal to themselves, and they hung out together. That's who they were. And boys and girls, and just, I never had to worry about them. I never had those teenage years where you sit there and go, oh, yay, like we're going to have to really crack down. That kid was never grounded. That kid never had privileges taken away. I could actually stop him by counting to three, by looking at him going, I'm at one. Do you really want to get me to two? And he's like, nope, absolutely not. Perfect. Then you need to settle it down. Did he go out to parties? Absolutely. And he knew he could call us and we would pick him up. We never had those moments where you have this drunk kid passing out and puking all over your place. We didn't have the discipline that came from that. He was, by all accounts, average. Good kid, did well in school, had his group of friends. His friends knew him. And what I think validated the point for me is that he had been there in Sun Peaks for 2.5 months. And those roommates that knew him for 2.5 months were as adamant about what he would do and what he wouldn't do and about his character when they were talking to the RCMP. It matched everything that afterwards his friends came up to search. And so the police talked to his friends. They mirrored exactly the same things. No, he's not the kind of guy that was out looking for a party every night. No, he was not confrontational. No, he had never instigated a fight, never been into that walk away, was quiet. No, he would never get into a car with people if they were saying, hey, you know, you want to keep partying, let's keep partying. If his friends didn't go out, he stayed at home in his rental. He hung out with the people he knew, but he just didn't do that. And so that's the other piece that comes into this. Like, you know, if I thought he would willingly walk off, that would be one thing, but he was almost 21. He bought his own car. He had his own bank account. He had savings in his account, more money than I think I did at the time, lots of available credit. And if he didn't want to come home, he didn't have to come home. If he wanted to quit his job, he could have quit his job. If he wanted to quit and come home and say, look, I'm done. I don't really want to do this anymore. There would have been no judgment on us. We would have said, okay, sounds good. Like you'll get a job when you get home, right? You'll find whatever. He could have been a garbage man for the rest of his life. And I would have been completely happy if he was happy. There was no expectation that you need to be more than what you think you need to be, as long as you're happy and you're producing the kind of life that you want to live. So we think, okay, why would he walk off? We keep thinking, well, what if he got into a car? That makes no sense to us at all, because none of his friends have said that, but he wasn't that type of person either.
Despite the fact that Heather and her husband never had any issues with Ryan growing up, I asked her if she was aware of Ryan's lifestyle when it came to drinking and partying.
But I have to say, I've never seen him really, really drunk. But yes, I knew he was drinking, and I know that he had shotgun drinks, and I know he had taken MDMA from what his roommates were able to tell us. And so that is like a party drug. Now, when I sit there and go, oh, okay, because I know he smoked weed. I knew that. And, you know, of course, do I condone it? No, but you're 20. So all I can do is caution you and say, like, if I had 6 beers every single day, people might be concerned about me. Can I function without them? So if you're smoking up a lot of the time, my question would be still the same. Do you need it for something beyond that? And where do you go from there? So, you know, I'd have those motherly conversations, but at the end of the day, he was likable. He worked. He never missed work. He did his job. He was functioning with his friends and all the rest of stuff. So nothing seemed to me to be an issue. When I knew he took MDMA when we got up there, when I found out that it was something that lowered your inhibitions, that made him more social, make him easier to talk to, I thought, okay, that doesn't surprise me because he's really funny and sarcastic and a leader with his friends, but on his own, he sort of pulls back. He watches. He doesn't engage. He's not like me. I could probably go into any social situation and feel like I can talk up a storm. I think that he had those hesitations and wasn't able to do that. So I think this drug made him or gave him the ability to just be a little bit more relaxed in social settings. Did he take anything other than that? I don't know. And I think that's what, you know, because you're there for 2.5 months, you're going to be introduced to things that perhaps you're not on a daily basis here. But again, that's the culture up there, some of the drugs that they take. So did he try something else? I don't know. And do I care? I don't judge Ryan in any way, shape, or form. I think that my son paid the ultimate price because he's not where he's supposed to be. He's not at home. He's not surrounded by his friends. He's not surrounded by his family. His life is not going on in the way that he intended. So I think my son paid the ultimate price. And so there is no room for me to judge him, whether he took something he shouldn't have, he indulged in something he shouldn't have. I don't have any judgment on that. But I'd like to know, because I think in some instances, it makes a difference about what his mindset was. Did you just take some weed? Did you just take MDMA and that was it? There's nothing else in it. Fine. Those drugs are predominantly supposed to do this and this. Okay, so we don't have to worry about, you know, you hallucinating. I don't have to worry about perhaps you're feeling a little down towards the end of the night. I don't have to worry about a drug exasperating that sort of feeling. But I don't know what he took. And so what should have been a simple walk home has no longer become that. I don't know where he could have gone. And that's the biggest thing. Did it blur his judgment? Did that make him get into a car he shouldn't have gotten into? But people aren't driving up to Sun Peaks to party there for the night and then drive home down out of the Sun Peaks area.
Is it possible that Ryan drank too much or took some sort of drug that altered his perception to the point where he had an accident during the early morning hours of February 17th? We don't know the answer to that question. What we do know is that none of Ryan's roommates have ever come forward and stated that he appeared to be heavily under the influence of any substance that night.
Could he have walked up the hill because he thought he was a bear? Did he think he was Superman and climb a tree? I don't know. I think I could have understood the hesitancy on his roommates or his friends' side of saying, well, we don't really want to tell you what he took or what he may have taken or he's taken in the past. I probably could have done that for the first couple of days, but 9 months later, there was so many opportunities to speak up and give us something so that we can find him. I think for us, the worst part is May 13th, I think, was when the majority of snow started to go. So we've been up there since February 18th and every day searching in snow, and it's not going away. And during those times, we keep thinking, we keep praying, okay, we're going to find him under the snow. And for me, I'm going to find him, you know, in the way of which if he passed, if he was in the elements, he passed, I will be able to, as his mother, look upon him again, because I haven't seen him since December 1st, the day he left. He didn't come home for Christmas. He didn't have enough time off. And we weren't able to go up there to visit him. And so I hadn't seen him since December 1st. And so for me, I wanted the opportunity to gaze on my son one more time you know, gather him in my arms. And I think tell him everything that I wanted him to know before I had to say goodbye. And so that doesn't come. And the months go by and the weeks go by and that doesn't come. And so then I have to reconcile myself to the fact that the snow is melting and the weather's getting warmer, and that we're not going to find Ryan in that condition that I thought we were going to find him in. And so, you know, there is that desperation to find them before too much happens to them. And then the days go by and the weeks go by again. And then you have to reconcile yourself to the fact that you're not going to find all of him, that we might only find bits of clothing or pieces of bones. And I can't even believe that as a mother, I have to tell my people who come to volunteer what they're looking for. You see, the bones aren't going to be bleached white. They're actually going to be more color of the ground. You're not looking for a blue coat anymore. It's probably going to be quite dirty and tattered and in pieces. So you're not looking for those things. And I can't believe that I can say that. I feel like there's this callous disregard for what I'm about, what I'm describing to you. And then as that goes by and we're sitting here 9 months later and the days go by and the weeks go by and now the months go by, I have to see if I can even reconcile myself to the fact that we may never find him. And that's a tragedy beyond, it terrifies me.
The Stuka family has had to endure 9 months without knowing what has happened to Ryan. Heather, despite knowing the realities of the situation, wakes up every day and does her best to try and find her son, even when it seems impossible.
Every day I wake up and I'm terrified that today is not going to be the day that I get a call that someone stumbled upon something, or someone, if they knew something, has given information. Every day I'm terrified I'm not going to get that. And every night before I go to bed, that whole nightmare comes true, because we're still here and I haven't heard anything. Everyone matters that goes missing, whether they do it willingly, unwillingly, or unknowingly. There's always somebody behind that wants to know what happens to them. You know, I sit there and I think about when I first drove up to Sun Peaks and I begged and I pleaded and I bargained, and I would have done anything if Brian could have been okay. And I know that's not going to be my reality now. And I think, okay, you know, I try to sit there and go, did I live a stellar life? Was it good enough to at least have an answer? And then I look at all these parents, and there's so many parents of missing children. And so many of those parents will go to their grave not knowing what happened to their children. And they were far better of people than I think I was or could be. And yet, what makes me so special? What makes me have the ability to have that answer before they ever did? And so that also terrifies me, that we'll do this day in and day out. And people say it's your new normal. You know, what you're going through right now is your new normal. Like, it's not a normal, because I don't have an answer. So I'm living today, but is my new normal the mother of a missing child? And is that going to be my forever new normal? So do I settle into that pattern? Am I going to be the mother of a murdered child? Do I have to then transition from that missing to murdered? And when does that happen? And is that going to be my new pattern? Or am I, you know, going to be one that a tragedy happened to my son and he went from missing and it's just a tragic circumstance of what happened? I don't know what my new normal is, and I can't live a normal. I can't have a new normal.
About 25 days after Ryan had disappeared, the Stukas were made aware that there was a criminal investigation now going on regarding their son's case.
It was day 25 before I knew that there was a criminal investigation going on. Up until that point, nobody came up to say, hey, we just want to let you know that we're also doing this. And I remember them saying to us, well, who have you talked to? You know, because we're concerned that the more people that people talk to are volunteers that come up. At one point, a case is made that it was foul play, that we will have jeopardized a criminal case against whatever parties were involved. I look at the constable in charge of that, and I'm like, well, that would have been super fantastic if you had actually introduce yourself to me before day 25 to let me know that, you know, whatever we have done in the interim may jeopardize your thing. But really, at the end of the day, I don't care about your case. And it's my son. And my son is my soul. Like, we were close. He's my heart and he's my soul. And I can't imagine that I would want to go through life not prosecuting or persecuting somebody that has done him harm. But at that point in time, I didn't care. I don't care about your case. I want my son found. I shouldn't be here day 25 not knowing what his final moments are. Why is every single day my son lived and was with us and in touch with us up until almost his 21st birthday? Why is every memory I have and everything everybody talks about February 17th, 2018? He is more than the sum of just that one day. And by all accounts, that day was great. So at what point did it stop being okay? But why is that the only thing that we can talk about? He's more than that. He was a great kid. He was imperfectly perfect. But I want him to be more than just 1 o'clock onward on February 17th.
As previously stated, the weather in this area is extremely cold and the snowfall can prevent any type of search effort. You would think that in the summer months it would be easier to look for Ryan, once the snow had melted. However, this would prove to not be the case.
The problem with the snow is that we probably had about a 2-week window of opportunity. From the time the snow melted, and of course the melting was gradual, so some places still had tons, even in June. Some places still had tons of snow and other places wouldn't. But you had about a 2-week window before the undergrowth came up. And when it comes up, it comes up. It was actually harder to search in the summertime than I thought it was going to be. So now everything is wet and it's dark and the sun's not getting through it. And so you were looking at the ground. But, you know, if he's curled up in a ball, let's just say he's out in the elements, if he's curled up or something like that, his jacket is wet, dirty, dark, against no light coming through underneath the trees and underbrush where you're getting scraped everywhere we go. We had 2-week window opportunity. If he had gone in a certain direction, could we have found him? Maybe, but again, we didn't know the direction. And so you sometimes wonder, did we spend a week too long there and then the undergrowth came on where we should have searched? And then that's if he was even in the same area. But could he have gone down further? Could he have walked towards Kamloops? Again, not knowing what his state of mind is. You know, there, of course, we have gone through every single scenario and we've debated it. So for every scenario that someone has generously messaged me about, we have thought of probably about 10 more. And it's not because I think that we're smarter than anyone else. It's just that most people think about my son maybe 10 minutes out of a day. That's all Scott and I think about from the time we get up until the time we go to bed, and how to manage our life in between not thinking about it. And so we do think about the scenarios. We do think about, okay, got caught up and just sort of left. We do think about, you know, could he have been hit by a drunk driver and someone panicked and threw him in the trunk, which seems such a far-fetched scenario, but could it have happened? Maybe. You know, could he have had a drug overdose and at somewhere along the way and someone panicked and decided to get rid of him? Okay. That also could be, you know, could someone have abducted him? Yeah. Could he have been, you know, abducted by aliens? Could he have combusted? You know, there's lots of scenarios that could have happened. The problem is that we don't have anything that tells us one thing or the other. So we search undergrowth. We had 2 weeks and it was difficult. It's hard going up there. Now my husband finds it a little bit easier because the growth is not, it's still dark and it's still dingy, but you can see a lot further underneath the tree.
One avenue they've attempted to pursue was to check all of the cameras in Sun Peaks. Was it possible that Ryan could have been captured on camera somewhere? Or possibly any vehicles driving around that night? Any kind of clue to point them in a new direction?
There are cameras in around the village. Some of them are working. A lot of them are dummy cameras. There is one camera, because there's only one way in and one way out of Sun Peaks during the winter season, because the rest is blocked off. It's too much snow that it's not accessible. So there's really only one way in and one way out of Sun Peaks. And so there was a hit and run, I was told, 3 years ago, and they were to install a camera so that they would be able to provide reassurance and protection to their residents, their guests, as well as their staff. So when we looked, and we still, I don't believe I have an answer for that yet, it's either live feed. So if I wanted to see if there's what the weather conditions are down in that Burfield area, then I could look at the live feed. Or they don't know what the IPN address is on it, and so there's no way for them to go back and look at that time. I'm not sure which one, either one, because I can't quite get a clear answer. Either way, it is not what I think they told the residents that camera was there for. I think they thought that camera was there recording. And had that camera did what perhaps it was intended to do, we would have been able to prove or disprove a lot of theories within the first 24 hours. Because if a car went off the hill, we'd be able to find out what the car was, who was in the car, where was it going, that sort of thing. We'd have something. If we saw somebody walking down that road, we would have been able to see that as well. If we saw somebody being hit, we'd be able to see that as well. So a lot of those theories could have been proven or disproven. They are building. They did some construction. So the construction actually had a camera there. And so the construction company allowed us to look at their video camera within the I think we looked at it by Monday or Tuesday after Ryan went missing. There's nothing happening. There was absolutely, in the time frame from 1 till, I think, 4:30 or 5 o'clock, there was nothing in that time frame that had anything. And even down at the bottom, so at the bottom of Heffley, so I said, remember that you're off the highway and the very first place is a gas station. They had security cameras as well. So even if we couldn't get it in at Sun Peaks, we might have been able to say, hey, did someone leave the road? Because there's only one road in, one road out. You have to get to the highway by going through Heffley. They had video cameras, but when I say a perfect storm, I mean a perfect storm. That particular weekend, they were transitioning over to a new security system, and their security cameras weren't working until Monday.
With all the scenarios that could cross a person's mind, I wondered if Heather had ever gotten an inkling that Ryan's roommates knew more than they were letting on, or were possibly involved in his disappearance.
His friends, the ones that he hung around with, you know, a lot of these kids didn't know each other. And so, you know, some of them obviously met December 1st. Some of them met in November. Some of them have come back more than once. Some of these kids from this party, some of the friends that he knows, they still live and work in Sun Peaks area. The house party that Ryan was last seen at, the roommates that were there that had the party, they still live there. Nobody seems to be concerned that, you know, that eventually something's going to be found and it's going to lead back to them. And they're living suspicious, you know, sheltered lives. They're carrying on without a thought about that. You know, Ryan's roommates came back home. His other two roommates that came in and we spent time with us seemed so, so nice. You know, do I know for sure? I couldn't say for sure, but that wasn't really my job. That would be the constable. But I remember the constable looking at me and saying, and maybe it's her experience or lack of, but she had said, you know, if something happened to Ryan that was outside of his intention or outside of his control, she goes, I don't think we've interviewed that person yet. I know people want to suggest because of the drugs and alcohol and all the partying up there, but those kids, we've never had not one secondhand, third hand, seventh hand information like saying, oh my God, you should talk to that guy. That guy, you know, something. Or that girl, or she's so afraid and she kept quiet. Like, whatever happened to Ryan, either nobody knows, or there's a very select small number of people that know, and even after 9 months, they are not giving up the ghost for that at this point in time. We've never really had blame for them. And, you know, here's the other thing is that young people, the people on the hill, they searched for the first couple of days, and then we really didn't see them after that. Now, did they go and look when they were between work or something like that? Maybe. I don't know. We had a lot of volunteers, but most all the volunteers purposely came up. And I think it's because the kids that worked at that hill, the staff, after a couple of days of not finding him, I honestly think they didn't think he was there.
Despite the lack of movement in the case, the Stuka family and the community within Sun Peaks has not stopped looking for Ryan. One thing that Heather pointed out was how welcoming and supportive the Sun Peaks community has been with the constant searching and questions about Ryan.
That Sun Peaks community, they have every reason to be tired of us. You know, we get our, you know, hotel discounts for searchers that come up. You know, we go through the back of people's property. Even now, we'll go through the back of people's property. We dug up snow. You know, we walked in their backyards. We had dogs up there. We brought so much attention to that community that was not positive in them the way that they liked. And they'd have every reason to want us gone. And yet, every single time we go up there, they make us feel welcome. What can we do for you? What do you need from us? Yeah, do you want to put billboards up? Absolutely, put them up on our property. Yeah, you know, I checked in the backyard, but please feel free to go again. Our small inconvenience of having you go through the backyard is nothing compared to the things that you're going through. I look at that, and to me, that's a true testament of what a community holds for people and why they watched out for that. And I look at, you know, Ryan had grown up in the town of Beaumont, where, you know, he was loved and cared for by the people around him. He knew so many people here through his sports and his school, through us and his sisters. Everybody knew Ryan. And he grew up in this protected community. And then he goes to Sun Peaks, and a lot of times, you know, I worried, and then I regret that the last moments of my son's life were not here until I met those community members from Sun Peaks, and I realized he went right to another community that embraced him and loved him, and they didn't all know him. Some of them have cared for him after his disappearance, and they have honored him in so many different ways, but that's a comforting feeling to me, knowing that he didn't go somewhere cold and pristine. He actually went somewhere that had love in it.
So what happened to Ryan Stuka on February 17th, 2018? How did he simply vanish in an instant with no clues left behind? Did he wander into the cold night and perish? If so, why hasn't he been found during the many searches for him? Did he get a ride with the wrong person? Could he have been the victim of some kind of accident that was covered up? Did Ryan just choose to walk away from his life? This case is such a bizarre mystery. They keep looking at Sun Peaks for Ryan because they have no leads pointing anywhere else. But with all the searches, the frustration has only continued to mount because of the lack of clues and leads. His family is desperate for answers, and they refuse to give up until they can bring Ryan home. There is currently a $15,000 reward for any information regarding Ryan's whereabouts. If you have any information about Ryan's disappearance, please contact the RCMP at 250-828-3000 or contact Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-8477. There's also a Facebook page called Missing Ryan Stuka. His family keeps us updated with information on Ryan's story and searches of the area where he went missing. Ryan is described as 6 feet tall, with a lean, athletic build. He has brown eyes, blonde hair, and weighs about 180 pounds. He was wearing dark-colored jeans, a white shirt with gray sleeves, a blue coat, and a burgundy baseball cap.
It was like a perfect storm. If we could have somebody go missing, Ryan went missing it feels like a perfect storm on a night that there was no moon out. It was a dark moon on a night that it was minus 26, and it stayed that way for the first week. And so that is not temperatures that they usually get for long periods of time. And they had record snowfall, 8 to 14 feet. It covers all your tracks. So every time you see a point or something that you may have made, or you've made progress, you could come back the next day with somebody else and they would look like you've done nothing. Like the snow fell hard and fast and covered everything up. The last picture that was taken that night at Bottoms, and what I love about it is when you look at that picture, you know, it's his last picture that I have. It's his last picture that perhaps was taken of him, and he was happy. You can see that. He was having a good time, and the smile on his face, to me, is, I mean, it warms my heart, because I know he was happy. And that's how I like to remember him, is that he was doing something he loved, and he was happy in that moment.
That brings us to the end of episode 152. I'd like to thank Heather for taking the time to speak with me. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There's a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at Wondery.com/survey. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Pennsylvania. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
I understand that anybody who's paid attention to the media would have to come to the conclusion that I killed my wife.
Hi, my name is Zach Stewart-Pontier. I'm one of the filmmakers behind The Jinx, and I'm excited to bring you the official Jinx podcast. We'll be revisiting all 6 episodes of Part 1 and watching along with Part 2 as it airs on Max, starting April 21st.
Bye-bye.
The official Jinx podcast. Listen on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.